Tape from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And we got an exciting week. We've got a very special guest. I think we should just dive right into it, Darren.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a guest in the house. John, we have company. We got the good china here.
That's right.
Yeah, our guest today, she's one half of the highly successful, highly popular podcast, Guys We Fuck, the anti-slut-shaming podcast, available on Luminary. She's an amazing comedian, talented comic, and she also has her own podcast called The Voices in Our Heads. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Christina Hutchinson.
Hello.
Hey, Christina, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
You're doing all right in the quarantine times? You're staying safe, keeping your sanity?
Oh, yeah. Decorated my apartment for Christmas. I've had a great time during quarantine. I cheated it by getting a puppy at the top, and I live alone, which is such a gift. So I have no roommate, so it's just me and a puppy. And
that's the dream.
Yeah.
Wow, you got a nice little doggy there. Cool. What kind of dog is it?
He's a miniature dachshund. He's not a puppy anymore. He's like 10 months now. But yeah, he's the best. He's my little companion.
Oh, awesome. And I guess you guys are like taping remotely like we are now in quarantine time?
Corinne and I have been spending a lot of time together over quarantine, and we kind of just figured, because we get tested pretty regularly for COVID, so we do the intros and stuff ourselves. So we have been doing, our interview subjects have been remote a lot of the time, but we have some in-person interviews. We just sit real far away from each other.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. And I mean, I thought we were having you on the show just because, like, you're a cool comic and a popular comic and a fan of SNL. But Darren told me last week, which I didn't realize, you've actually been an intern at SNL.
Oh, yes. SNL is the reason I met Corinne. It's the reason I moved to New York City. SNL is the reason that I got into stand-up. It is, I credit a lot to that to that show. I think my obsession first started when I first laid eyes on Gilda Radner. She's my favorite cast member. I thought that when you grew up, you had to act like an adult. I didn't understand that it's possible for a grown woman to be childlike. And so she was the first, her and Carol Burnett were the first examples, because my parents loved the Carol Burnett show. And so I don't know how I got into the older SNLs, but I remember seeing Gilda and I was like, that woman, what does she do? I want to do that. And so I went to Penn State initially for college and Happy Valley. And I wanted to be on SNL. That was my dream when I was in high school. And so I realized halfway through that first semester that I needed to be in New York. I'm like, wait a second. SNL has interns. If I intern for them, then I can be on their radar. I'll be like the least annoying intern they've ever had. Like, very helpful, because I know how to like work it. Like, I know how to be helpful, but not annoying and all that stuff. So I was like, oh, I got to get an internship there. So I moved colleges and I transferred to Marymount Manhattan College, where I majored in acting. And then the reason I say it's why I met Corinne is because I thought that I was going to move to New York and get the internship right away. It took me 3 failed interviews with them saying,
wow.
No. So my first ever internship interview in New York City was with a talent management company called Lehman Entertainment that Corinne was a junior manager at. So that's how we met. And so I ended up auditioning or interning, excuse me, for 30 Rock, the TV show, the casting,
which
was in 30 Rock. Their offices were in 30 Rockefeller Center. So I was like, holy shit, I'm in the building. Like, that was my second year in New York. I got that internship and I was like, oh man. And then I interviewed with SNL at the end of the season. And they were like, we love you, you're great, and you have all the experience, but no one leaves. When you intern at SNL, you don't, like, there's no empty spots ever. Mm. Because if you get in there when you're a freshman, you don't stop interning there. Like, if you do well and they like you, you just stay there and then you become a page or whatever you do.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't get the internship. And then the last semester of my college career, spring semester of my senior year, I was like, this is it. This is the last, because you can't intern for NBC unless you're doing it for college credit. And so I was like, if I don't get this, I'm going to just kill myself. And because it's all I wanted at the time. And Dina Moles, who works in production at SNL, she was the one who interviewed me, and she remembered me from all the other times that I'd interviewed. And we had a great interview. And then she called me like a couple weeks later and said, "Hey, I'm so sorry, Christina, but no one left. Like, no, there's no spots." And I was like, "Oh, okay." It's like, if anybody decides, you know, they have to go home or whatever, like, you can call me. And she was like, "I will. I'm sorry." And I was like, "Okay." And then we hung up. And then 20 minutes later, she calls me back. And I was like, "Hey, what's up?" And she's like, "You know what? Just come in Tuesdays and Saturdays. We'll figure it out." And I was like, "This is the best." Wow. It was the best day of my life. I'll never forget where I was. I was working at the Apple Store in Soho. My grandpa died that day, but oh, wow. I was so goddamn happy over this internship, and it was very confusing. Wow. I knew he was going to pass away because he had been ill, and I was very sad about that. But I was just so, I got the thing that I wanted for like 4 years. I was trying to get it, so I just like that was just one of the most. I just couldn't believe it. I was so excited. Like when you want something so bad and you get it, it's wild. It's just like, it's like magic is real.
Yeah. That's my, now how many interns would they normally have?
So my friend actually, Daria, who is a producer on television to this day, both went to Marymount Manhattan. We transferred the same year. So we were at the transfer dorm. She actually got the internship, her senior year. She was a year older than me. So I was like, "Holy fuck, you got it." Like, so she interned with Andy, directly with Andy Samberg and Lonely Island. And she was in Laser Cats. Like, they use interns for a lot of those videos. So she was fucking in Laser Cats. She was in a couple of the other shorts. And I was like, "This is so fucking cool." And so when I kind of got like a, I mean, I'm so thankful to Dina Moles for, I would have taken any pity internship. I don't give a shit. If they just wanted me to come there 1 hour a week and just stare at them, I would have to do that. So I kind of had like not a real, so on Tuesdays when I came in, I just like organized the wires. Like I kind of did work that didn't really need to be done because they didn't need help. She just kind of felt for me and knew I wanted this really bad. So I sat in the office just smiling like a kid for wrapping cords. And I was just asking anybody if they needed anything. And on Saturdays is obviously the best day. I get there early and I'm part of the group of interns that checked everybody into the commissary, which is on the 10th floor. So what happens is on show day, there's this commissary on NBC's commissary, and they have like cooks come in and do like these gourmet, I mean, just the most delicious food you've ever tasted in your life. And it's a buffet. And so we would check people in, interns, talent, producers, everybody who worked on the show. They just had to show us their badge. So we'd check them in. And then during dress rehearsal, which was, I believe at 9:30, so between dress rehearsal, there's always a bunch of extra sketches. So they film maybe two or three extra sketches. And so between dress rehearsal and air, somebody decides, the writers and Lauren decide which sketches they're cutting. And then they have to reprint the order of the show. That piece of paper needs to be distributed to the control room. So it was also my job to take the papers for the new order for the show and take it to the control rooms. So I got to see the fucking like... the brain of the operation, which was so cool. I kept one. And the one I kept was the Betty White Jay-Z episode. I have one for that. That was the day that I passed Beyonce Carter in Giselle Knows Carter in the hallway. She's my favorite human on the planet. And I nearly died. So yeah, wow. So that was my duties for SNL. So Tuesdays, I really just kind of didn't do anything. But then Saturdays, oh my God, it was the best. I mean, it was... just thinking about it. I just can't sleep thinking about it. Like it was the best.
Now around what era of the show were you there? You were there like early 2000s, I guess?
Yeah. So I was only one semester because it was my college, my spring semester of my college career, my senior year. So it was that's how I know what year it was. So it was 2010. I think it was the second to last episode was Betty White was the host because everybody, there had been a campaign.
I remember that was like a Mother's Day episode.
Yes, exactly. It was. And then Jay-Z was the musical guest. That was like the second or third to last show of the season. But that was when I interned there.
Wow. Okay.
All the parties. So interns weren't allowed at the after parties because I guess a few years prior, one of the interns slept with Jeremy Piven when he was hosting. And like, bitch, blame him. Okay. You know, he went in there, picked one out and was like, you want to hang out? And she's like, me? Like, fuck off. Don't blame it on the goddamn interns. So we were only allowed to go to the after parties, which that hurt my heart. Cause I was like, oh, I can't wait to go to these parties. So we went to the after, and those were fucking unreal. I mean, those were so much fun. Oh God, those were really fun. And I stayed up. I didn't discover Adderall yet at that point. I certainly didn't do cocaine. I didn't do drugs except smoke weed. I just stayed up because I was so excited until 3 a.m. to go to these after parties. So I would go back to my apartment, hang out, and then there was a phone number you call. You call the phone number and they say, the party is at this address and this is the password. And then, so you go to the venue and you say, like, it's really, and there's like paparazzi outside. It's so fucking cool. It was awesome.
Wow. And,
like, you know, all the cast was there. Like, fucking John Hamm was there all the time. He was like at every party. Wow. It was fun. It was wild. I've seen some wild, wild shit. Ryan Phillippe accidentally burned a cigarette out on my arm. And I have a scar from it. And apparently he propositioned my friend and I for a three-way, but I do not remember that. And we said no. And my friend told me that story last year. And I was like, are you, what? And she was like, Christina, he was gross. I'm like, that's Ryan Phillippe. I don't care.
Wow. I'm
a star fucker. I don't care. I just am. I am a celebrity. It's fascinating. And being in front of somebody who is a celebrity is just, it's like you're watching, like the Milky Way. Like, it's just like, it's wild. Cause people make such a big deal out of it. And it is a big deal when you're there.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine. So, I mean, it's like you said, like when you know, celebrities, I mean, they technically they are just average people like us, but you know, the way we kind of treat them and these like these talents they have, they're kind of like otherworldly almost, or like not like gods or nothing, but they're just like a step above like the gods. Average.
Yeah, they get treated like, and I think that also makes them, some of them, not everybody, act like it. But I remember I used to go to, when I first moved to New York, this is how into SNL I was. I would go to ASCAT, the Upright Citizens Brigade.
Of course.
I would go to ASCAT every Sunday. And I would do the free show, so it would be the late one. And I would wait in line, and I would go for years, every Sunday for years. And I remember Bobby Moynihan was a staple there. Bobby and Chris Gethard. And I remember when Bobby got SNL, I was like, oh my God, it's so fucking cool. Like, you saw this guy who was just this, you know, in this black box theater every Sunday. Now he's on SNL and he's got like Drunk Uncle and his fucking characters are so good. And it was so, and then like I saw him at the parties and we got to know each other. I'm like, that's just, and I'd go up to him and be like, Bobby, you're like getting famous. How crazy is that? Like, I was just so happy for him. It was so cool. It was so cool to like witness somebody get plucked out and then just like blossom.
That is cool. I don't think I ever knew that SNL had after parties, but that makes total sense.
Yes, they do. And it was, you party till the sun comes up. And then before COVID hit, my good friend who I don't know if I can say this on the podcast. So I won't say his name, but he's a comedian and he does warm up for a late night show. He gets me into the after parties all the time. So I have this story from an after party. Cause when I moved to the city, I have balls. I will get into any party. And that's also like, you know, a young chick sure. has this like clout. Right. And so you're kind of like, yeah, I can do what I want. Not in a shitty way, but like, and you kind of can. So I would sneak into parties all the time in New York. And I snuck into a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction party like once. That was my first year here. And I met Will Forte and Kristen Wiig. And Will was in my short film. Like, we've been friends for like 7 years. That was
Oh, nice.
I met him before my first year there. So years before I interned at SNL. And so I always had this like thing of where I would just go into a party and just pretend I belonged. And so I've been going to the SNL after parties, not the after, because I would go with my friend who knows the security guards. And so, Dave Chappelle, Corinne and I opened for Dave Chappelle 2 years ago in Denver. He wanted to do we had a 3-day weekend there and he wanted to do our Thursday shows. And we were like, yep, absolutely. Do whatever you want, boo. And we got to hang out with him. And he's such a good person. And he's such a nice guy. And he's so curious about I was so blown away by hanging out with him, as I was by his stand-up. So, there was the Eddie Murphy episode. which was like one of the biggest of this last year, was one of the one of the biggest deals ever, because he, you know, his history with not really coming back and doing the reunion episodes, all that shit. And he's just one of the best cast members. So we went to the SNL, the Eddie Murphy party, and I was like, this is fucking cool. I saw Lizzo and Chappelle was there. So Chappelle was at a table with Lorne Michaels and Steve Higgins, and three of them in a booth. And it's like, I kind of knew the drill at that point. I'd been to a lot of after parties. And so, Lorne always kind of sits in a table in the back and you don't really talk to him. Well, at least I don't, because who the fuck am I? I'm nobody. Like, so I just shut the fuck up. But if you're a cast, obviously you go up and talk to him. So I was talking to a bunch of friends, and I think it was like Joelle Johnson I was talking to. And then I noticed that Lorne, Dave Chappelle, and Steve Higgins were at this table, like right by me. And I was like, holy fucking shit. Like the men at that table are just, oh my God. Like they're legendary. And so I don't know why, but I was like, I'm going to sit down at that table. And I walked over to the table and all my friends were like, Christina, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, I don't know, man. And I sat down next to Dave Chappelle as he's like telling a story to Lorne Michaels. I was not drunk. I was not high. I wasn't stoned. I was sober, dead ass sober, with like the balls of a fucking elephant. And I walked over, I sat down, and Dave goes, huh? I was like, all right, Christina, it's okay. You can save this. And I was like, oh, it's Christina from Guys We Fucked. He's like, oh, Christina, what's up? And he gave me a big hug. And I was like, yes.
Wow.
We had a good time together in Denver. And we talked about a lot of stuff. And I kind of felt like we connected, but I was like, yeah, maybe he's just like really like that. Like, cause he's so personable. He's not going to remember me. But I had seen him in Montreal and he remembered me. So I had seen him a bunch of times at that point and said hi. And he was like, Christina, what's up? So I sat down at that table and he's like, oh, what's up? How you doing? And I was like, no, I'm doing good. And then like Steve Higgins was like inviting me into the conversation. Didn't know who I was, but had respect for me because Dave just gave me a hug. And I was like, this is one of the best things I've ever done.
God damn.
I couldn't believe the balls I had. I'm like, I can't believe I did that. You just gotta
I was about to ask you like how many drinks you had, but you were stone cold sober. That's even more incredible.
We grow old and we forget, like, you know, as we get older, we're like, I used to be goddamn adventurous and like fucking go get, like, I would manifest shit. You know what I mean? I'd be like, I can do what I set out to do if I work really hard, or like, you know, and I'm like, I want that back. You know, I don't want to buy into, oh, we get older and we get more tame and we lose our fun and joy. So that was like a nice little
rule. Well, Christina, that's like less than 2 years ago.
Yeah, but I hadn't, but why I say that, because I hadn't done anything like that since I was 22. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay.
Like, so I was like, ah, what, I turn 30 and then my balls go away? Like, or my ovaries go away? Like, no, fuck that shit.
Wow, that is confidence that I will never know. Holy moly.
That is something that a young lady can pull off that the dudes in our 40s cannot.
Yeah. We could be escorted
out. Steve knew kind of who I was, I think. And then I had an in with Dave. Dave knew who I was. So that was the only reason I did that. If I didn't, Dave would have been like, excuse me, get the fuck out of our table. Say that to people. Who tried to do dumb shit with him.
Right. Yeah. If we had tried to pull that off, it would be like, okay, security is going to escort you out and rough you up a little bit outside. You understand.
Yeah.
That totally tracks.
Yeah. Girls are definitely can get away with stuff more. Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's quite a story. Holy moly. I knew you were like a huge SNL fan. Cause like, if I remember correctly, there was one point where I was like, I think on Facebook you were dressed as like Sally O'Malley for Halloween once.
Oh,
I remember when I saw that, I was like, oh, she's an SNL fan.
Yeah.
That's a deep cut. I respect that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's always been interesting to me to watch people like Jenny Slate. Like, she was not utilized on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that in her first episode she like accidentally said fuck, but it's like you kind of set her up to do that. Like, that was the
whole thing. Yeah.
So you can't get real mad at her. But then she like, she blossomed after SNL. Like, she and Wilson like didn't really get utilized a lot. And then she, like, a lot of these folks are on TV or doing movies that they're amazing. Like, Jenny Slate's career, oh my God, I love her. I love her, all of her cartoon voiceover work. But you know, if you only saw her on SNL, you'd be like, who's that?
Yeah, it's so funny that the way that some people click on the show and some people don't, and it doesn't seem to have much relation to how funny or how talented they are. I mean, some like Sarah Silverman was on the show for a hot minute and didn't make too much of a mark, but I mean, she's had an incredible career.
Yeah, but if you watch her Weekend Update segments, you're like, oh shit, this chick is ahead of her time. Like she, her segments still hold up. I loved her Weekend Update stuff because they were just weird like she is. Like I really, oh God, I really liked her at SNL, just no one else, you know, I guess it didn't make waves the way a Kristen Wiig would or Will Ferrell would.
Right, right, yeah. It's just, I mean, some people figure out how to make the show work for them and some don't, or the circumstances aren't quite there or you know, whatever. I mean, there's so many factors, you know?
Yeah.
So. Well, did you have any other interesting interactions with any of the cast or the writers or directors, anything like that?
So many. Just the first after party I went to was the season finale. So at the end of the year, their after party is. Oh, I have another story. Is on the ice skating rink. So that was as an intern, I was allowed to go. And then I accidentally yelled at a kid, and then it was Lauren's kid. And I was like, all right, I'm just gonna take a breath and go to the bathroom. Like, and then I realized, like, Christina, you gotta chill. You just gotta chill out. Like, because I wasn't drinking, I wasn't smoking. I was so obsessed with it that I was like, I need to be very sober for every second of this. And I kind of hugged the puppy too tight and suffocated it a little bit. But after, you know, and then, so at that party though, at my last day of interning there, John, he was a writer and an actor on 30 Rock, and he did UCB. What the fuck? John, J-O-N. What is his name? Bald guy, blonde guy.
Lutz?
John Lutz. So John Lutz was a writer there. And at that party, the very last day of my internship on the skating rink, I asked him, that was the only party where I was like, I want to have a drink. And I had some whiskey and I went up to John Lutz and I was like, hey, what do you recommend as a track to get on the show? Like, what do you think? And he goes, stand up. Right away he said stand up, which I was like, huh? Because he did UCB. He never did stand up ever.
And you weren't doing stand up at this point?
No, never even thought about it. Never even entertained the idea. And I was like, oh, okay. And then the next day I figured out where to do a bringer show at Broadway Comedy Club. And then that's because of John Lutz saying that to me in that moment. That's why I started stand up.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the show really has had a profound influence on your life and your career. Oh, I mean, gave you your career.
Yeah. 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 I read all the books on it. Like that's why I was so excited to do this podcast. I'm like, oof, I will talk about SNL till I'm blue in the face. I'm trying to think of other like really cool party stories. Heather Graham was there a lot. It's weird to see like a hot celebrity, like a female hot celebrity, because they're so hot and you're like, holy shit, you're a person. Like, you look like clay. Like, you don't look like a real person.
It's disconcerting when you like meet someone who's that stupefyingly gorgeous in real life. Yeah.
It's just, I'm in awe. I love beautiful people. It's just, I stare at them.
Yeah. John, you saw like Margot Robbie once at that Comic-Con, right?
Margot Robbie.
Yeah. At New York Comic-Con last year, you know, back when we still had public gatherings like Comic-Con, Margot Robbie made a surprise appearance to promote the Birds of Prey movie, which was still upcoming at that point. And a friend of mine who was working the con kind of tipped me off that it was happening. And so I was like sort of standing around the area. So I'm maybe like 10, 20 feet from her. And she is just as gorgeous in real life.
Oh my God. She looks so beautiful. And her smile, like she just radiates. Oh
yeah. She lights up a room, man.
She's one of the hottest people on the planet. Like she's just so damn hot.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
I walked by Beyonce in the hallway because she was there with Jay-Z when they were, it's a very narrow hallway where the dressing rooms are. There's two studio doors. One of them is where like the audience comes in if you sit downstairs, and the other one is right by all the dressing room curtains. And it was really cool to see the quick changes happen. Like, that was just wild. Like, they just ripped the clothes off you and put the clothes back on. And then with Betty White, I remember I was like, she was like getting manhandled, but, you know, they were doing the best they could.
They don't do that in like a curtained off area? You could like see the change happen?
Well, there's curtains, but it's like, you don't have time. You don't have time to be modest. And no one really gives it. It's just like, it's you know, in theater, when you do theater, you see nudity all the time. And it'd be just, it's not even weird anymore. It's just part of it. So I was like, but there's this narrow hallway that kind of connects those two doors. And that's when I passed Beyonce. And I felt like, she's so hot. She's one of the, oh my gosh, she's so beautiful. But she just radiates, like, she like seeps from her pores. Like, I don't even know what it is. It's just like the best energy you've ever experienced in your whole life. Because she is, you know, full human potential to me.
I remember like some behind the scenes article about SNL at one point, and this was like when Amy Poehler was still on the show. And I think she was talking about the quick changes, and she just said, she had a quote that always stuck with me. She just said, "We've all seen each other's kibbles and bits."
Oh,
and she was just saying, like, basically everyone in the cast has seen everyone else in the cast naked at some point or another, or exposed, I guess.
Absolutely. And it's like, who cares? So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just, That's just part of the job.
It is.
Right.
So, all right. Well, I mean, should we get into last night's show?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Last night's show, December 12th, 2020, Timothy Chalamet hosting and musical guest Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
Yeah, this is season 46, episode 8, Timothy Chalamet's first time hosting. It was Bruce Springsteen's fourth time on the show, I believe.
Right. So,
he was last on the show about 5 years ago, I understand.
Right. And, I mean, going in, I think both John and I, we didn't know much about Timothy Chalamet. Mm. I mean, we knew he was, like, the hot new young actor. He was in Little Women, the Little Women movie that just came out, and Beautiful Boy, and Call Me By Your Name. He's come in the new Dune upcoming film. I remember I pitched this show to you, and Christine, you really seem to know quite a bit about Timothy, or you're a fan.
I'm very sexually attracted to him. That's really it. That's all it is. And usually, he looks like a young person, and I usually like give me someone in their 40s and 50s. But I don't know what it is about Timothy Chalamet, but I'm like, he is just dashing. And usually, I don't care about guys that are like pretty like that. But for whatever reason, I don't know what I saw him in, but I was like, oof. You do.
I'm the mama.
Yeah.
Just fanning yourself. Ooh, loaded.
I host a podcast called Guys We Fucked. I have not even made out with a guy in 11 months. So I'm like, you know, just seeing Timothy on the screen just is enough for me. And that's really nice.
Oh, wow. There you go.
All right. So you were looking forward to this episode. I take.
Yeah. And he wasn't bad. A lot of sketches. I thought he did really well. Really? At first, I thought it was British. I was like, wait, you're not British? Holy shit.
With that name, he seems like he should be British or French. I've seen some commenters saying, like, yeah, he seems like he should be French.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's like, because he had, like, an accent over the E, and, like, he's like, oh, no, I'm from New York. I was like, what? Yeah.
I think one of his parents is French, so.
Ah, okay.
So, right, yeah.
So let's get into it, guys. Cold open, situation room. With Wolf Blitzer, an indoor man with an outdoor name.
We got Beck Bennett returning as Wolf Blitzer, and he introduces Kate McKinnon as Dr. Fauci and Heidi Gardner as Dr. Burks, and just, you know, talking about the coronavirus and how they've dealt with it.
It's basically them talking about, like, the vaccine. And of course, you know, it's him giving the facts. It's, you know, Kate McKinnon playing another guy. I'm trying to see if
I do love the running gag they have of Kate McKinnon playing so many guys in the Trump administration. I mean, I think that's a great running gag, and she's talented enough to do it. I mean,
yeah. And I've noticed when she was doing the cold open last night that she has the similar approach that Will Ferrell has, which is why I think Will Ferrell was so successful in his characters. Her characters are all so earnestly trying their best and completely unaware of themselves. And she gives, that's why Will Ferrell's George Bush for me was the best one, because he made him stupid and lovable. Like,
I mean, his George W. Bush was basically like just this dumb frat boy who became president.
Trying his best. So obviously Dr. Fauci is not a hated person. So everybody loves him anyway, but she's just so good at, giving a little, shining like a little bit of light on a character, but you could still hate them at the same time. So like her Giuliani, I think that's great. Kate is so fucking good.
Yeah. Oh, she is amazing. I mean, she's like all time top five for me.
Yeah.
So, right.
And I liked how they were playing it. You know how popular Dr. Fauci is. Like women are throwing their bras at him during this.
Yeah.
And Heidi is just like, well, you know, one time when Trump suggested people drink bleach, I sort of shook my head no.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, Heidi does some good work in here, too. And she's one of my favorites, too, in this new cast. Like, I always like her character work.
Yeah. I heard her Montreal characters audition a couple years back. And I was like, damn, she's good. And then she got a spell, like, right there. And I was like, damn, that makes sense.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't get it after the show, but like the character, because a lot of SNL people, they either get scouted at a UCB or a Iowa, like one of the improv theaters, or the character showcase at Montreal just for laughs.
Mm. Oh, wow. You give me some inside information here. I know
how to get on that show, and I've tried, and I haven't been on it, but I know the track.
Have you ever gotten to the point of having an audition?
No, I've submitted a reel, and you know what? They weren't good. The reels weren't good because like I said earlier, I hugged the puppy too tight. I wanted it too much, and it fucked my creativity up. But I'm like, that's all right. I got other stuff I want to do that is exciting and fun. So I feel like SNL, like, I was very like, oh, I didn't make my dream thing that I wanted. I'm like, but it got me to meet Corinne and got me here to New York and got me.
I mean, I think you're doing okay on your own. Yeah. You know?
You're going to be just fine.
I think you've found your niche.
Thank you.
Back to this cold open. The two things that really stuck out to me in this cold open, one, it's only 5 minutes long, which hasn't happened in a while, from what I remember.
Yeah.
And no celebrity cameos in this cold open. I was like, whoa.
It is nice. It's a refreshing change. Because the long debate sketches with all the stunt casting, it gets a little wearying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to have like a cold open with just the cast members and only like 5.5 minutes, that's a refreshing change of pace. Who knew?
It's like you're functioning like an improv theater, like you're functioning like the original cast, like it's like you're one like amoeba kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So I mean as far as cold opens go, that was okay, you know, not too terrible. It's nice and short, so it didn't drag on too long. I had a few good jabs here and there.
It didn't have any huge laughs for me, but I mean it was functional.
I liked it. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, sometimes I realize I expect to be blown away by everything, and I'm like, it's a live show that they just wrote 4 days ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're expecting an episode of SNL to be wonderfully funny all the way through, I don't know if that's a realistic expectation. It's by its nature, it's going to go up and down.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So now let's go on to the monologue. Timothée Chalamet comes out, beautiful young man. Just cheekbones for days. He comes out and he talks. Was that
much better crowd than last week?
Yeah,
you commented last week, Darren, that the crowd wasn't too responsive to a lot of stuff. This crowd seemed really hyped. Absolutely. They were there for it.
Yeah, like this crowd was way better. I don't know what was going on with that last week crowd, but this one is here for it.
Yeah.
So Timothy, he does like a little talk explaining about himself, how he's a native New Yorker, you know, grew up in Hell's Kitchen, which got a big, which I did not know.
I did not. I thought he was from France or London.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he explained that his mother back in the day did background work on SNL. And he's like, she was actually in the sketch Massive Head Wound Harry. And Chris Farley nearly puked on her. And they show a clip of Massive Head Wound Harry, which it's, if you haven't seen it, first off, get off your ass and go to YouTube and go watch Massive Head Wound Air. But yeah, you see her in the background, right behind Dana Carvey. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was so sweet. I was like, oh my God, what a fun history.
And then his mother's actually there in the audience up on the balcony. You know, that was really cool. That had to be really meaningful for both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then he went over to the piano and gave a little talking about Christmas in New York while he was supposed to be playing the piano, but it didn't look like he was. But, you know, it was basically him talking about, oh, yeah, I remember Christmas in New York, you know, ice skating on the Hudson, skating down or sledding down the Chrysler Building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had my first kiss with Mr. Met's daughter, Miss Stacy Met. Sweet girl, big head.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of shades of the Harry Styles monologue a little bit. And then he was joined by Pete Davidson.
Yeah, who made some comparisons between a New York Christmas and a Staten Island Christmas.
Yeah, like basically saying like in Staten Island, instead of milk and cookies for Santa, they leave out Bud Light and White Claw. And you hear Santa coming down the chimney only to realize, nope, it's just rats. I mean, and of course, at the end, Pete kind of says, yeah, you know, Staten Island has a problem, but I love it. I love you, Staten Island. Which to me was, that seemed to be like sort of him apologizing for all the people
he talked to.
Yeah, exactly. Like he might like it, because I guess and he ticked off a lot of people when he was,
honestly, of all the boroughs, Staten Island has like the most racists, the most like it's like, yeah, it kind of sucks.
No. As a native New Yorker,
shit about people being pissed off about that. Because when he went there and he went into it, oh my God!
Yeah, like I mean, as a native New Yorker, like I can attest, Staten Island is kind of
it's where all the trash New Yorkers are.
It's a weird place. Like I grew up in New York, like, and like I'd never been to Staten Island until like I was almost 30. And yeah, it's basically not... yeah, it's like a combination of like Jersey, Long Island. And the Italian parts of Brooklyn.
Yeah. And a lot of Trump.
What could go wrong?
A lot of Trump flag. I mean, I'm like, yeah, you're not you're the dumbest borough. You're the fucking dumbest borough. Not that everybody there is dumb, but I'm like, when Pete said that, I was like, nice. Because I don't know when I learned that Staten Island, I like just had all the Trump people in it. I'm like, ugh, fuck this place.
Yeah. I've been there. I've done a couple shows there. Yeah, it is. There's just a weird vibe about it. It's very MAGA. It's like,
yeah.
You're kind of glad there's no train that goes directly there.
You're
kind of glad they got to come here by boat.
Boat, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as far as monologues go, that was not too bad. Pretty sweet. Nice little monologue.
Yeah, I always enjoy it when they have like a little bit of history of the show and they talk about that. So I was pleasantly surprised by the Massive Head Wound Harry thing. Because, you know, that for me, that's the era when I first started watching the show. So that's always going to be like the real SNL to me. So that was really cool, I thought.
Yeah, I remember that Massive Head Wound Harry sketch, seeing that as a kid. And oof, like that prosthetic like head wound, it is jarring when you first see it. And then it's when the dog comes in. I don't want to spoil it. When the dog comes in, it's like shit gets knocked up a bit.
Christina, have you seen it, I'm assuming?
I try to think. I know of it. I'm like, what happens in the sketch?
Okay, I'm sending you a link when we're done recording. you would know it if you'd seen it. You would not have to think about it.
Oh, that's with the not the props, with the fucking the dog licks his head.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Yeah.
He probably smells my dog.
They try to recreate like really gross things. Like there was one sketch like years ago with the massage, like needle, like acupuncture or something. The guy was like bleeding everywhere. And you could tell they were trying to like
the
grossness of this sketch. And you're like, ah, I see what you're doing, but you can't redo a great thing. You just got to make a new great thing.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Moving on. We got our first sketch, a Rona Family Christmas, or as it's called on YouTube, Coronavirus Holiday. I don't get this trend of SNL. They put a title on the screen and then they put the sketch up on YouTube. They have a different title for it. I don't get what's going on there.
You're throwing us all off, people. Come on.
It's just weird. I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I'm just saying it's weird.
What do they change the title to?
It's called Coronavirus Holiday on YouTube.
Okay.
So I don't get that, but okay. So we have Beck and Cecily as the parents, and everyone in this sketch, they've got the coronavirus headpiece.
Right.
How do we describe this? They're wearing like these round helmets that look like the actual virus.
Yeah. They look like a cell of the virus.
Yeah, exactly. And they talk about how they've been traveling nonstop all year, and it's been an amazing year for them as coronavirus. And Lauren Holt comes in as the daughter home from college, and she's had a great first semester. I took out a whole dorm. And she's got a new boyfriend who's played by Andrew Dismukes. He's the one who infected Tom Hanks. And then their neighbors, the herpes, stop by.
Yeah.
Right. They always show up when you least expect it.
Yeah, yeah. And Bowen Yang was oral, and his wife, Genital, was played by Chloe.
I love Chloe Fineman. Oh, my gosh, she's funny.
She's amazing. She's going to be one of the greats.
Yeah.
And we had Timothy Chalamet come in as Spike, the son, who's sort of the black sheep of the family because he's the one who failed to infect New Zealand.
Right. And like him and the father kind of have it out. Like he's not living up to his father's expectations. His father's like, oh, no, you're going to end up all washed up, like one of those washed up diseases, like on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, and then they keep going, and like, you know, like Timothy Chalamet is like kind of the rebellious one. He's telling his, you know, I wish I wasn't your kid. I'm going to go get the vaccine. I'm going to have the antibodies. And then Beck says, yeah, oh my God, he's joining Antibo because antibodies.
Yeah.
I don't know. This sketch, it kind of reminded me of like a sketch that they would have done like in the 80s. It had like a very old school SNL vibe to it.
It absolutely did. I think a big part of that was like the cast was all in the goofy headpieces, so it automatically reminded me of like a Coned sketch or something like that. What'd you think of this, Christina?
It was okay. It was all right. The first one that blew me away. Oh, well, I mean, we'll get to that, but I forget which one was first, the Lexus commercial or the Dionne Warwick. But they were both fucking good. Those ones. Oh, that's really fucking funny. This one was, I was just like, yeah, it's cute. Like, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need, like, again, like, I don't watch the show expecting to be blown away by everything because I don't, that's not what it is. Like, the show is just like, I don't know. I just see the work that goes into it. I'm like, I just appreciate every sketch. But that one, I was like, haha, you know, it was kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, a lot of the accomplishment of the show is just the fact that they put up the show at all. You know,
so many people have different senses of humor. Like, I'm sure some people that was their favorite sketch. So it's like, which mm-hmm. you know that they try to cater to like a more general array.
Right.
This
was decent. I thought it was solid enough. I mean, it amused me, and you know, it's just fun to see them in the silly coronavirus headpieces. I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a cute sketch, you know, mostly bolstered by puns and, you know, disease wordplay. I thought it was okay.
So next we had a sketch that Christina just mentioned, the December to Remember car commercial, which is a parody of the Lexus December to Remember commercials where we've all seen them. The husband surprises his wife with a car at Christmas. And this just kind of points out that is not a thing that happens in the real world.
I love this sketch. I love commercial parodies. I love when they take the bullshit of a commercial, just a company that's just fucking eating their own asshole, just like patting their back, acting like their goddamn customers fucking purchased cars for each other, especially now, like fuck the audacity, like fuck you. And I love how they started out really. Her, I noticed right away the wardrobe was perfect. The makeup and the wardrobe.
Yeah.
Why am I blanking on her name? We were just talking about
Heidi.
Heidi Gardner's wardrobe was exactly like that bullshit, boring, like, I'm a hot mom who wears tan. Like, so funny. And then when she got real pissed, and then when the way that sketch built was building up, I really liked all the layers that got added to it. I cracked up at that one.
Yeah, I mean, so they have the husband, like, surprising the wife at the end of Christmas, and he brings her out to the driveway, and he's like, hey, I bought a new Lexus. And she just goes, did you seriously buy a car without even asking me? That's a major purchase.
He thought that the down payment was $4,000, and he thought that meant the car was $4,000 or whatever the amount was.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, that's adorable. And he doesn't realize that monthly payments are a thing. He doesn't realize what APR is.
It's pronounced Apper, John.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I like, you know, they were saying, like, oh, yeah, your father's been out of work since last March. And he's like, well, like, coronavirus hit everybody hard. And she's like, no, you've been out of work since March of 2019.
Yeah. Yeah, like the way
he cracks open the beer, he goes, I don't have to go to work anyway, right? I'm like, oh, that's so fucking sad, dude.
Yeah, the way it just builds, like you said, look, the way the sketch builds and builds and builds is amazing. Like the way, like, and then Mikey comes in as a neighbor saying he sees the car. He's like, wait, is this what you spent the money I lent you on this Lexus? You were like, you were saying to me, like, how you need to get back on your feet, and oh my God, I need money. And like, oh, my wife doesn't respect me. She's cheating on me with everybody.
Yeah. And then he's like, hey, Sheila, how's it going? yeah, I really like this. It was funny and fast. It's like under 3 minutes. So it really hit hard and it hit fast and it really worked for me.
Yeah. This is a good
one. Yeah. I mean, like, there's some great, you know, like I said, great character work done by Heidi. I mean, Beck is always good as, like, you know, the goofy white dude who's just like a big old oaf.
He's playing clueless dudes.
Yes, he's really good at that. Like, that's his wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be sketch of the night. There's another, well, we'll talk about later, but there's like another sketch that we'll get to that is, like, in my mind, kind of neck and neck with being sketch of the night. But this is definitely the one of the highlights of the show, I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So next we have the Dionne Warwick talk show with Ego playing Dionne Warwick. This was just basically about, well, Dionne Warwick just joined Twitter and she had some strange tweets.
She has some beef, and they I love when the audience, when they brought up the beef with Wendy Williams, the audience was like, oh shit. And I'm like, oh, this is a good crowd.
Yeah. I didn't see the Wendy Williams stuff, but I did see the Chance the Rapper tweets where she's like, why do you add the rapper to your name? Isn't it, like, self-evident that you're...
I had zero context for the sketch. I didn't know that was actually a thing. When the crowd went, ooh, over the...
The Wendy Williams?
Yeah, the Wendy Williams beef. I was like, oh, this is, like, a real thing. I was just thought it was hilarious as is. And then when I realized it was a real thing, I'm like, no way. And Ego's so funny.
Yeah, Ego's really been kind of sort of showing what she can really do this whole season. Mm-hmm. Like, there's been, like, a lot of sketches where, you know, she's been, like, the centerpiece of, and, like, she's really, like, on the ball. Like, I know a lot of people are saying, like, when Kate leaves the show, I mean, people have been saying, like, this season will be her last, and, like, people have been kind of thinking, well, who's going to sort of, you know, take, you know, Kate's mantle when she leaves? Like, who's going to be in, like, the new... it person in the spotlight.
Yeah.
You know, people have been saying maybe it's Chloe, maybe it's Heidi. I think it's a strong case to say that it might be Ego. I agree.
I think that her, like, one of the things that's really impressive about her is that she doesn't try too hard. She's very easeful with everything she does. And so a lot of times that you don't notice that cast member at the beginning or the first season or two because they're not anything that's, like, loud, but that's not what's funny, because I feel like people kind of conflate, like, you know, oh, well, they're loud and, you know, waving their hands up and down, that's funny. But she's really the new her on the news anchor sketch where the two black anchors and then the two white anchors are reading the stories and they're predicting, like, oh, this one was a white guy, this one was a black guy.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
She kills me in that sketch, and that's such a simple character, like, it's not, but her subtlety with that one, I'm like, god damn, she's good.
Yeah she is a really, really talented person,
right? So, but yeah. I see what you mean, Christina, because, like, there are some cast members that are, like, kind of a little bit more bigger and showier.
Yeah, showy. Yeah
And then there's like other cast members who are doing really great work, but it's not as flashy, like Vanessa Bayer or you know, somebody like that from back in the day, where it's like she was doing really good work, but it wasn't getting maybe like the spotlight that like other cast members got. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed this sketch. This was the other sketch I thought was like right up there for me, neck and neck with the Lexa sketch. Like I enjoyed Ego's, you know, performance as Dionne Warwick. I liked how, like, she would say, she would go into different segments of the talk show saying, all right, well, here's the stand-up segment. And she would just sing, like, one of her Burt Bacharach songs.
Yeah. Then,
like, the first time she did it, I didn't get it. But then when she said, well, here's the cooking segment. And she just went over to Andrew Dismukes, who was the chef, and she just sang another song as Andrew's trying to break in, explaining what they're about to cook, and then like just walked away. Like, oh, it's like, oh, I see what you're doing now. Okay, I like
it. You could tell, like, when she, I'm assuming she came up with the idea for that, because she, oh, what the fuck else? Oh, there's sketch she wrote, like, at the top of quarantine when it came out. I remember, like, Chris Redd credited her as writing it, and I was like, fuck, that sketch was so good. I forget which one it was. But you could tell that she saw the Dionne Warwick shit unfolding on Twitter, and she's like, no way, no fucking way. And was like, I gotta, like, you could tell she thought the idea was so funny, and she, like, respected it because she thought it was so funny, and she, like, kind of just executed it perfectly with those subtleties.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed, like, the running gag of just Dionne Warwick being kind of clueless about present-day pop culture. Yeah. You know, like, the world has passed her by a little bit. And we have to mention Chloe Fineman with her Timothy Chalamet impression.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I don't know why I love that impression so much. And but yeah, so they had other, you know, people come in as other artists, as guests on the show. They had Timothy Chalamet come on as Harry Styles. Was it Melissa Villaseñor was Billy William Eyelash or Billy Eilish.
Yeah.
What was it? Oh, like you said, Chloe Fineman was Timothy Chalamet doing her impression. And then Pete Davidson came on as his buddy, Machine Gun Kelly, too.
Are they buddies? I didn't realize.
Yeah, they're good friends.
Okay.
That's how Machine Gun Kelly is, because I follow Pete online on Instagram for a while because when he started comedy. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the King of Staten Island movie.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But yeah, I like what Ego was doing here, where she was kind of giving that kind of that auntie vibe, I guess, like people, someone who's not really familiar with, like you said, like technology is the way it is and not really.
Yeah, like she hands the phone to Timothy Chalamet or Chloe is Timothy Chalamet and is like, yeah, unlock my phone so I can send a tweet back to a snap back to Wendy Williams.
Yeah, they really. And of course, at the very end, I really loved where she told her audience to check under their seats.
Because I don't owe you anything.
Yeah, exactly.
That was like, so fucking funny.
Where they look down, it's like, hey, there's nothing under our seats. It's like, I don't owe you anything. I don't know why.
It was so like, that's why, that's where Ego, it's just like, the subtlety of that was just so fucking funny. I don't owe you anything. All right, good night. Because it's like, oh my God.
And that was probably like, if the sketch had a point, that was probably it. It's like, you know, doesn't matter that Dionne Warwick isn't really up on Chance the Rapper. Hell no. I mean, because look at what Dionne Warwick has done. So.
Yeah.
So this was another really good sketch. I really
like the ending was great. Oh man, no one shit out on the ending with that.
Yeah. And it's so tough to like end a sketch strong. I mean,
we've
seen so many sketches that just peter out and this one didn't. So points to them for that.
Okay. So next up we have The Farm, the second pre-tape.
Yeah. Which on YouTube is just called Tiny Horse.
Right. Tiny Horse. Again, I don't know why. All right. Well,
whatever. Yeah, why are you putting a title on the screen at the beginning and then you put it up on YouTube under another title? Perhaps I just don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
So in this sketch, it's called Tiny Horse. Beck and Heidi are, again, another married couple. They're a farming couple. Bills are past due. They can't afford to keep the farm, so they have to sell it. Their son, Timothy Chalamet, again, you know, very upset and distraught.
They're not selling their son, just to clarify. They're selling the animals.
Right. They're not selling. This isn't black market child selling.
Yeah. Although that's a way to go. That's a choice.
It's a choice. It's a choice. It's a
choice.
You got to pay for that Lexus somehow.
Yeah.
So, they tell their son, Timothée Chalamet, they have to sell the animals, all the animals. Timothée Chalamet is very upset. He goes out to the stables to say goodbye to his only friend, a tiny horse living in a small box. And we get this sort of claymation, like horse walking out of the very small box, like a horse the size of like a thimble or like a little thing of nail polish. And he's just singing to this horse, this tiny horse, saying, yeah, we have to part ways now. This is an odd one.
This is a weird one.
This was a weird one. Yeah. Yeah. And he has sort of like an imagined spot of like the tiny horse goes on and lives his life. He goes to Animal University. He gets a star on the Walk of Fame. He marries AOC for some reason.
He goes into politics and is named the Secretary of Horse Affairs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird one. I did like the gag where he's like, you know, telling the horse to the tiny horse to go, and then it cuts to a wide shot, and the tiny horse is like maybe a foot away from him because he's just moving so slowly.
Yeah,
that was a good gag.
That was amusing. I was so on this. I like my comedy to obey the square cube law, so I had trouble with this, but you know.
Yeah, I really was kind of surprised to see this type of sketch so early in the show, because this has 10-1 written all over it. This,
what was that, Christina?
Usually, it was very reminiscent of the very last sketch they always show, which is usually the weirdest one.
Yeah, exactly. That's where you put the weird stuff.
Yeah, this had 10-1 written all over it. But yeah, I thought it was cute, but yeah, it was just like, This is an odd one. This is a weird one.
That was a thing that they did. If we have nothing else to say about Tiny Horse, next we got our musical guest for the week, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. Bruce!
Oh, the guy from The Sopranos started out with Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, boy.
That's how much I don't care about Bruce Springsteen. I barely watch it, but I was like, oh, this is a fucking, oh my God.
Dude, that's what you just said kind of reminded me of like the way people are just now realizing that Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek was in Home Alone.
Wait.
Yeah.
Wait, who?
Huh?
As who?
She was Kevin's mom.
Oh, you mean Catherine O'Hara. I didn't know that. I was like, wait, because I named my dog after Kevin McAllister from Home Alone. I'm like, I know every character. Wait, there was a character in Home Alone named Moira?
No, I'm talking about Schitt's Creek is Moira Rose.
Okay, got it.
Right. Because like, I noticed that was a thing online where people were like, hey, did you guys know that Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek was in Beetlejuice?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
Yeah, I was like, doesn't everybody know that?
Catherine O'Hara? One of the best. But
did you know that actors play different parts in different projects?
Put some respect on her name.
I know.
But I mean, I personally really love the Bruce Springsteen segments. The first number in particular, Ghosts, I thought was just amazing. I thought it was really great. I'm going to have to pick up his new album. I really loved it. I mean,
right. And
I'm a Gen Xer, so it's, you know, I was the target for this, I'm sure.
Right. I liked the first song too, Ghost. It was like vintage classic Bruce to me. Just like big, you know, bombastic chords and just a lot of heart and soul and dude on a saxophone. Like, my God, it's everything you want.
I didn't realize that the current saxophonist in the E Street Band is Jake Clemons. He's the nephew of Clarence Clemons, the late great Clarence Clemons, the big man.
I think I knew that. Yeah. But it was good to see him there. And the second song, I'll See You in My Dreams, was also, I thought, was really good too. It was like, I thought a little bit slower, but it still had, you know, that Bruce touch that you want to hear.
I thought that the second song was really touching. I mean, that, you know, it's somebody who's like lost somebody this year. That really spoke to me. So yeah,
But yeah, I really dug both these performances. I also liked how each member of the band had their own mic. Because like in my mind, I was thinking, oh, are they not going to do? Is Stevie and Bruce not going to do the share the mic thing that they always do? And as soon as I thought that, sure enough, they went and shared the mic. I was like,
boom.
Oh, that was sweet. Sorry. That's right.
Yeah.
COVID can't take that away from us.
But not so much your thing, Christina.
I mean, he's a legend. He is one of the most beloved people of New Jersey, right? Like Bruce Springsteen. I watched the performance. His music is great. It doesn't move me the way it moves other people. But I mean, you watch him and you're like, this motherfucker is so talented and has charisma that only he can have, the type that he has.
Yeah.
So it's cool. Yeah. But I kept going, this fucking Silvio, man. Like, that's not a good thing to say to people who are obsessed with Springsteen.
Yeah. I mean, I can see how that might set them off.
I certainly want to respect. I respect fandom of any kind, and I know that he has such a wonderful, loyal fan base. I mean, you could tell he's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly didn't become a fan of his until I moved to Jersey, really. I mean, I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but
he's like the Jersey staple.
Yeah, I've become all Jersey. I'm eating pork roll, egg, and cheese all the time now. And
Taylor Ham?
Yeah, Taylor Ham. Oh, don't get us started on that.
Oh, dang.
I get happy when I see a Wawa.
Oh, I got a Wawa tattoo. I am that's more reminiscent of like me crying in the parking lot in Pennsylvania, but they also have a lot in New Jersey.
What, you have a tattoo of a Wawa, the logo?
Wawa Goose, yep. I got an outline of the goose.
That is dedication. Holy moly.
That's commitment. Wow.
But yeah, I didn't get into Bruce until like I moved out here. And I was listening to a podcast where they were talking about how much they love Bruce. And then they talked about this one song he did, Backstreet, and how people kind of thought it was about like a gay love affair that like two people were trying to keep hidden from the world. Mm-hmm. And like when I heard that, I was like, whoa, Bruce wrote a song about a gay love affair? I went and listened. And if you read the lyrics, it could read as that, but Bruce has always said, no, that song is about like a friendship that just ends, and like how, you know, like people can be like really close-knit, tight friends at one moment, and then as time goes on, they just like lose touch and separate, go their own ways. And I was but if you read the lyrics, they're like really, really like poetic and really lovely lyrics. I never really listened to the lyrics just because his singing voice is like very kind of hard to understand sometimes, and he has like that gruff, growly voice. But if you like look at what he's saying, it's like, oh wow, that's really like poetic and beautiful. So like ever since then, I was like, all right, I gotta listen to some more Bruce Springsteen and see what I've been missing.
Yeah.
He's still like rocking as hard as he ever did. He's still producing great material. The man is 71.
What the
71, fuck? Man.
I would have sex with him. I mean, he is. I mean, not because of that, but just because he's a hot. He's 71. Are you serious?
That's what I saw online. He is 71.
Wow.
He could be a dude in his 50s.
What a babe.
Yeah.
Oof,
he's taking care of himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is.
All right. And, you know, hey, Bruce, if you're listening, you know, give us a call. We'll set you up with Christina.
Podcast, too. I'd love to take you out to dinner.
Yeah, that's right. Take you out to Wawa, sliding them DMs.
That's right.
Okay, so next we have a weekend update with Colin Jost and Michael Che.
I love them.
Yeah, we're big Che fans here.
Che is so great. It's been really cool to see him like really get his own vibe with the update, and like, oh, I love the dynamic that he's built with Colin of like he just tries to make Colin uncomfortable about race. It's awesome.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's fantastic. I'm looking forward to the next week's episode when they do that joke swap thing.
I love that.
I bet we are going to see that next week. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's always fun. That is always fun.
And it's Chris who is hosting. I mean, Jesus. Woof. I'm going to take the night off. I'm so excited for that one.
Yes. Expectations high.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, they had some really good jokes. Like, Che had this one really good joke that didn't get anything from the audience. And I don't know if it's because the audience didn't get it or it sounded like they didn't get it. But like, it was the one where they're talking about the Texas lawsuit. and how yeah. they were trying to invalidate the election results in four other states, which is a plan so crazy that only Texas would execute it.
Right.
And like the audience didn't get it, but like
a minute, I guess. One of those, because they do go fast. Like, they don't really give you time to think about the joke, but some of them, I could see people go, oh, execute Texas. Okay.
Yeah, that's a really ballsy joke that, like, I don't know, I guess maybe just flew by the audience or whatever, but I was like, God damn, that is cold.
I think my favorite line of his tonight was Moderna vaccine is my favorite Tyler Perry character. Something about that just tickled me.
It sounds like it does sound like a Madea movie. So I get it.
It kind of is. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah. And then Joe's had some good lines here or there. We're talking about how Trump has always been a fighter, or at least that's, you know, what his brain scans would indicate.
Right. I love that one. Yeah.
I was like, wow. All right. But yeah, not a bad weekend update. Christine, did you have any thoughts on it? Or
I loved it. I love Weekend Update. I love the dynamic that they cultivated between the two of them. I think Colin is leaning in more to like being a guy you want to punch in the fucking face. Like, you just want to punch him. He's leaning into that fully, and it's perfect. It's absolutely works. And then Michael's such a great state. I mean, he's such a good stand-up comedian. So it's so cool to watch him just. But I feel like so proud to be a stand-up comic watching him on there, because I'm like, oh man, he's just really good. He's found his rhythm, and I love how hard he goes. He does not pussy out on any jokes.
No.
And I really respect that. And he gets mad at the people that whenever the audience is like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
I love his little additions that he adds, like he's riffing on stage, you know?
Yeah. And if it's a joke that he that didn't get the reaction he thinks deserved, he's like, I still stand by that.
Yeah, I like his comedy. I love that. Really funny.
Yeah.
I respect that. All right, so first weekend update segment. Kate McKinnon returns as Dr. Wayne We Notice.
Such a sweet character.
I could have done without this character returning. I don't really find this character amusing. So I feel like this was an example of the cast amusing themselves instead of the audience. So it didn't really work for me.
It worked for me only because I'm like, oh, this is like Kate's inner child coming out at the end. I don't know why, but as she did that character the first time, I was like, what the fuck is this? And then the ending, I'm like, oh, this is like a really sweet, earnest, like she's just going nuts in her office, doesn't know what to do, and is really overwhelmed by the world. Which is
right.
I feel sometimes. So I love this character because she takes her time with it, and it's weird. It's fucking weird. And that's the thing about SNL. Like, I think they cater to a lot of various types of people's weird, which is completely different. Like, my weird that I find funny and amusing is different from your weird that you find funny and amusing, which I really like. So I was a huge fan of this character coming back.
I mean, it was basically pretty much a carbon copy of the first time she did it, where, you know, they're talking about the vaccine and she just responds by saying, we notice. At one point she gives Colin Jost a vaccine, which is just her squirting water onto him through this huge syringe needle, singing come on vaccine. And I understand that this is like a type of segment where if you really love Kate and you're willing to just sort of watch anything she does, this is for you.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And but
it's predictable. It's like, you're using the same exact format. You're just replacing like two words. But I don't know. That character just, I think, represents the stress of the world caving in.
Yeah.
Just like all you want to do is make fun of it and laugh for a second.
And she kind of does the same thing at the end of this one that she did the first time, where she had that like kind of breakdown. Because like in the first time she did it, people didn't know if that her breaking character was like real or not. It was like it seemed like she was really having a meltdown. But like now she did the exact same thing again, so I was like, oh, it's, you know, it's kind of like, oh, she's melting down again. Oh, this is all just like a bit. But I don't know. I thought it was okay. But I understand how some people would love it and how some other people wouldn't be too crazy about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we had another segment on Weekend Update. We got Melissa Villaseñor dressed up as Dolly Parton singing Christmas carols here. I don't know why I turned into Archie Bunker at the end there. Sorry about that.
Yeah. That's okay. That's okay. And yeah, and Colin was just like, Melissa, you're like dressed up as Dolly Parton. I know you've been trying to get your Dolly Parton impression on the show for a while. And she's like, what? No, what are you talking about? These are just my natural things. I'm amused that she just calls her breasts her things throughout the whole segment. That just seemed very Melissa.
She's just like, I got big things now. Come on, Colin. She has her own brand of weird and slow, and I always fight against it when I see her do a Weekend Update thing, and then I'm like, oh, she's so goddamn lovable. She's adorable.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I thought this was, I mean, she does Holly Jolly Christmas in like a dead on Dolly Parton voice, and it just,
yeah, I thought it was fake. I'm like, that's how good it was.
Yeah, yeah, and then she sings like Jingle Bells to the tune of Jolene, and then like the kicker at the end, she says like, oh, I remember as a child going to mass and my favorite hymn, and then they start up the beginning of 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I thought it really showed how much Melissa has been underutilized by the show, because I mean, she is such a good impressionist and she doesn't always get the chance to like strut her stuff, you know?
Yeah, I've been paying close attention to her on Instagram because she's like very close to a Gilda Radner type, and over quarantine, like over the summer, she was finding really creative ways to utilize getting her impressions out there on her Instagram account. And I was like, ooh, this chick's really talented.
But yeah, like I do wish, like you said, like she is kind of underutilized. Like I think I said it before in the podcast, where it looks like Chloe is kind of, you know, rising up in the ranks a little bit more as the impressionist on the show. And I don't know. I think that maybe might be because it seems like Chloe kind of knows how to use like the, because she came up with Instagram, so that's how she got kind of gained her notoriety.
I didn't know that.
So it seems, huh?
I didn't know that about her.
Yeah, yeah. Like I remember like when she was first announced she was going to be on the show, people were saying, "Oh yeah, she does all these impressions on her Instagram account," and that's kind of how she kind of, you know, got into the public eye. So I think she knows how to maybe market herself a little bit better through Instagram.
Yeah.
Like when she did her Drew Barrymore impression. She put it out on Instagram, and then she got all these likes and followers, and even like Drew Barrymore herself liked it, and then she got to be on the Drew Barrymore show. So I think she just knows how to use it more to her advantage than like Melissa does. But either way, I just wish, like, you know, they used Melissa more, because like as we saw in the segment, when she gets a chance to do what she does, she can knock it out the park.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. All right. So next we have Holiday Baking Championship 2020. This is a sketch that they've done twice before. They did it on the Eddie Murphy show and they did it on the Don Cheadle show, with just a big bacon show, and most of the cakes are disasters.
Right. And it's if you've seen the sketch that they, you know, they did on Don Cheadle show and the Eddie Murphy show, it's literally pretty much the exact same thing.
Yeah, it was like a find and replace.
Yeah, it's like it reminded me, like, you know how like when you were in school as a kid and you would like cheat off somebody's test and they were cool with it, but they were like, no, just change a few of the answers so it doesn't look an exact same thing. This was that. This is just like pretty much a copy, except they changed a few words here and there. Instead of like a cake that was asking, you know, begging for death, it was Timothy Chalamet with a cake that look like a vagina or a butthole, depending on your view.
Yeah. I like the only time I laughed during that sketch was when one of them was like, can we show that on TV? And he was like, why? What's wrong with him?
Yeah. I mean, I did like when they said, like, why is it puckering? And then you see the sort of waver. And then later in the sketch, it starts erupting chocolate lava. Just because it wasn't looking enough like a butthole.
Right.
I was also a little amused by Kyle Mooney's character towards the end. He's like, you know, hey, this is something that you don't see a lot of during the holidays. And he comes up with this turkey, but it looks like just a big, it looks like a dick and balls. And then he just sort of proudly is like, oh no, it's a dick and balls. That tickled me a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like how when Beck says when like Ego said, "Oh, can we show that on TV?" And like you said, Timothy says, "Well, why can't we show this?" And Beck says, "Well, that looks like one of two things."
Yeah, yeah.
So it's either vagina or butthole. And yeah, I mean, I didn't write down anything for the sketch really. It just seemed like whatever sketch. Yeah. It really didn't.
It had amusing moments, but honestly, I don't know if we needed this back for a third time. So.
Yeah, I mean, I respect like I respect the work that went into it to have like the stuff sort of bubble out of the cake and how Timothy loses his arm to the cake, but it's like it's a lot of work for not much of a payoff.
Yeah, that sketch was catering to the chunk of audience or viewers that are like basic bitches. Frankly, and you know, I get rid of them because they make up, you know, a lot of the population that is going to buy shit that they see on commercials. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Like basic bitches deserve comedy too, Christina.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they do, but I understand it.
Wow.
Wow. To your audience, not down.
All right. We will table that discussion for another time, but next we have a rap round table. This,
love this game.
Okay. So we had Ego as the host of a show about hip hop. We had got Punky as Queen Latifah. Questlove playing himself because I guess he was in the building. and then Pete Davidson and Timothy Chalamet playing like a TikTok rap duo.
Yes,
they're
playing Guap Lord and Smoke Cheddar the Ass Getter.
As you do.
I just love that Questlove genuinely tried to be like, all right, well, I respect you doing your thing. And then he's like, yeah, fuck you, and then hits him. I just love it.
Yeah.
Because he's really trying to, like, talk about the history of hip-hop and, like, how, you know, meaningful it is. And, like, you know, you're included, too. And as the audience, you're like, no, they're not. And then he finally gets sick of him. That part tickled me. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, as somebody who grew up on, like, 90s hip-hop and has, like, you know, a grumpy old man view of SoundCloud TikTok rappers today. Yeah. This warmed my heart. I really like, you know, except when Timothy Chalamet was like, "Nah, I'm down with hip hop. For me, it's all about that yeet." And it's just like him, them saying yeet a bunch of times, and Pete Davidson screaming out "skirt, skirt" at the top of his lungs.
Yeah. It was. They really did a good job of embodying the obnoxious bullshit trust fund kid who thinks he's a fucking hip-hop artist. Like, oh, come on, dude.
Yeah, and like when Ego tries to talk to them and saying, well, no, let's, like, who inspired you to do hip-hop? When, and I think Timothy was like, well, you know, I like Fall Out Boys.
Yeah, I was like, oh, god damn. It was, yeah, they were just perfectly hack stereotypes of that dude.
Yeah, it's I mean, for somebody who loves hip hop, yeah, this spoke to me, like how
I love this, you know,
yeah, exactly. It's like when like Timothy Chalamet was trying to like looks at Questlove, he's like, oh, yo, you was in Yo Gabba Gabba, and, like, he knows him from that, and not his long music career,
right. And he's like, yeah, for one episode 10 years ago, and they're like, mad respect.
You a legend for that one. I love that. I loved how they said one of their rap pioneer icons was like, oh yeah, I love the Car Rats. And they're like, who are the Car Rats? It's like, nah, they were like driving around from that commercial and they're driving around in the car. And it's like, wait, you talking about those Kia hamsters from the commercial? And it's like, oh yeah, that's the one. Skirt, skirt. Yeah, this tickled me. I really dug this sketch. It was hilarious. Like, they're, you know, it's a bit, like you said, like a take up of all the Tekashi 6ix9ine Little Pumps of the world.
Little Pumps. And that was the last sketch, right?
No, it was one more.
One more after that.
What was the last sketch? What was
that? The last sketch was Sportsmax, which was basically right. Newsmax for sports, where they say the Jets are winning. So, you know, like Newsmax is apparently like the even. If, you know, Fox News isn't far right enough for you, and Newsmax is talking all about how Trump really won the election. So now this is the thing for Sportsmax, where they say the Jets are winning, even though they've lost every game this season.
Yeah.
Right. And again, this is like another one where we have Alex Moffitt, who he's another guy who's kind of getting underutilized. I've noticed like he's really good, but like I just kind of wish they used him more. And he's like one of the Sportsmax newscasters. He's talking to Beck Bennett, who is a guy who's like, yeah, you know, if you look at the scores, you know, the Jets, we were up 3-0 in the first quarter. But then if you look at the other quarters, suddenly out of nowhere, all the other team gets all these other points. I wonder why. Yeah. And so, you know, like, it's, so it's basically that. It's like basically like if Fox News had a sports channel. And then of course, they have Timothy Chalamet and Pete Davidson again. Like, the two of them were kind of paired up in a couple of sketches, I've noticed.
Yeah.
Like, chicks think you're both hot, so let's put you together.
I mean,
because they're like, let's, you know, one of the best audiences you can get is like younger women that are like boy crazy. So I feel like that was putting them together on screen was a conscious choice.
Could be.
I did notice that like in some sketches, Timothy Chalamet seemed a little nervous, but whenever he was with Pete, he was like
relaxed.
Better. He was more relaxed. So like I don't know if they're like friends in real life. They probably are.
They seem like. They seem like they're friends.
Yeah. So we had the two of them as a sports duo, DeLuca and Del Vecchio. And of course, it's like the sort of stereotypical, you know, Jersey, you know, Jets fan. And it's like, it's basically like Timothy Chalamet screaming how they have sworn affidavits that the Jets won their last game while Pete Davidson shovels cheese fries in his mouth.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And of course, then they go to the other sports team saying how the New York Knicks are the greatest team ever and how Jeremy Lin is the greatest of all time.
Yeah. You know, this only semi worked for me just because I'm not really a sports person. So, yeah, I was just like, this was okay. I see what they're going for. Didn't entirely work for me, but.
Okay. The same thing. I'm not a sports person, but I know enough that like the Jets are really terrible this year and the Knicks have been terrible for a while. So I was able to sort of glean like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing here. And like, I also got a kick out of this because I swear I was working on a joke with a similar premise to this sketch where I was working on like a thing about how, you know, America's all divided because we watch two different news channels, like the conservatives watch this, the liberals watch this. And like, that's not how news should work. It should be all one big news. Like you don't have like a conservative weather network, and god damn it, they had a conservative weather network in this sketch.
They did. We have Kyle Mooney. They cut to him and he's like, oh, it's, you know, 60 degrees and sunny, and he's like in the middle of a snowstorm.
Yeah. So yeah. This is my way of saying that SNL is reading my joke books. I would like them to stop, please.
Wow.
That's right. Gauntlet
hard through. Accusations from Darren Patterson.
That's right. I'm putting it out there. But yeah, I mean, as far as sketches go, I thought it was a pretty good sketch. I enjoyed it. Christina, any thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was okay. I don't follow sports as much. I know everything about the Eagles and the Philly sports teams, but that's as niche. So when they make fun of the Philly sports fans, I'm like, that's hilarious. But I was just like, yeah, I don't, it's fine. It was like, okay.
Go Birds.
Okay, so I mean, what do we think of the show overall?
I mean, SNL is a legendary comedic establishment that has had a beautiful arc over the since 1975, and it is the commentary on the culture at the moment. I think will be a very valuable, as no matter how many people shit on the show, which is always blows my mind. Think of the work that goes into it. I think it's a really great commentary on what we were dealing with. So you go back and you're going to look at this season, you go, oh God, that was the fucking coronavirus season. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love their little time capsules of making fun of our reality. That show, that's what that show is to me. So I thought that today, that's the episode that we're reviewing today was great. It had a little bit of everything and I liked it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would co-sign on that. I thought this episode it was better than last week's episode. Definitely. Mm-hmm. It had more stuff in it that I really liked than didn't. Like, I mean, the Lexus commercial I really liked.
That I think was the highlight for me.
I really liked the Dionne Warwick. I really liked the rap summit, the rap, mm-hmm. you know, with the you know, fucking the rap. And of course, Bruce.
Because this is how much I don't know what their fans are called. Well, I thought they were booing him at first, and I was like, that's very disrespectful. And then I realized they're saying Bruce. Okay.
Yeah, they were saying Boo Earns.
As far as this episode goes, I really dug it. I thought it was a pretty solid episode. You know, of course, this one had peaks and valleys. Of course, you know, Tiny Horse, I wasn't crazy on. The baking competition. They either do something different with it or don't bring it back. Because it's the third time I was like, all right, you're just
going to play out.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like I said, it's had more sketches that I really enjoyed than not. So I would say thumbs up. This was a win.
Yeah.
I think it was a pretty good episode overall. I think I feel like Timothy Chalamet and Bruce Springsteen are maybe a little mismatched as a host and a musical guest, but it still kind of worked.
Yeah.
If you're going to mismatch, like do like a, you know, Jay-Z and Betty White kind of mismatch where you're like, that's a good combo.
Yeah. Or Justin Bieber and, and RuPaul. Yeah. That was the weirdest match we've seen in a while, I think.
Yeah. Actually, the weirdest match I remember was from the 90s, where it was Rage Against the Machine and Steve Forbes.
Yes, I remember that.
Whoa.
That had no business being a thing.
That one's so perverse, I kind of love it, though. What did they even talk about backstage, do you think?
I have no idea.
I want to be a fly on that wall.
Like, hey, I'm Tom Morello. What's going on there, Steve Forbes? You're the enemy, right? Oh man, and so that's our episode, guys. Thanks so much for listening, Christina. Thank you so much for being on the show. You were gangbusters. You were dynamite.
Thanks for having me. I love talking about this show.
Yeah,
this was such a kick. Yeah, we're gonna have to have you back sometime. So this was a lot of fun, and you know, because I'm sure your podcast needs a boost from us. I mean, where can people find you?
No, I co-host Guys We Fucked, the anti slut shaming podcast, with my comedy partner Corinne. That is available only on the Luminary app. It's a paywall, but it's only like $2.99 a month. So it's really, and you get all these exclusive podcasts. That podcast is my pride and joy. And then I have a solo podcast called The Voices in Our Heads, where I do deep dives into books like about childhood trauma, therapy shit. And I just kind of give you the best of, but I make it very funny and weird. And so, yeah, those are the two places you can listen to me. And my social media handle is at Christina Hutch, KrystyNa.
All right. So we will check you out there, and we encourage all of our listeners to check you out there as well. So
thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Thanks so much for doing this. This was so much fun. Yeah. All right. Darren, do we have anything else? Next week we are back with Kristen Wiig and Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
So,
final show of 2020. And hey, if you're so inclined, why don't you give us a follow on our Twitter account at SNL Nerds Show.
Oh, yeah, you could do that. You could do that. We're at SNL Nerd Show on Twitter and Instagram. We also have our individual accounts. You can find me at Trumbull Comic, TRUMBULL, and the word comic. And Darren, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me at Darren Credible, Twitter, Instagram. That's Darin Credible.
All right. And please, if you like the show, or even if you semi-like the show, give us a review and a share on the iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast, because every little bit of that helps.
Absolutely. So, guys, thanks again for listening. See you next week. Final SNL episode of 2020. Kristen Wiig, Dua Lipa. And, I guess that's a wrap. So,
you beat one.
So, until then, nerds out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive Producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Nonproductive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.